Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Late Night with the Midnight Bomber, with the Neutron Bomb and Captain B2. Unfortunately, the incomparable Neutron Bomber is not with us this evening because she's not feeling too hot. So I gave her the night off. So I'm holding down the fort myself, and I hope Mika. Are you out there, Mika?
Oh, I'm here. How are you, Bobby?
Oh, I'm splendid and glad I'm not by myself. Thank you for your help.
We have several callers.
No kidding? The word must be getting around what a hot program this is. Turn them on. Let them in.
All right. Well, first of all, we have Babbler. Welcome, Babbler. How are you?
Oh, way. No show without Babbler.
Well, that's not quite true. I'm pretty sure the show goes on whether or not I'm present, but I appreciate
But it didn't have the same panache.
Oh, okay.
Who else do we have? Welcome.
We also have a Faziana. Hey, Faze.
Oh,
hey.
Bless her heart. Faze, girlfriend, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. There's always room at the table for you, darling. You know that. Is that a place just for you, just in case?
Thank you.
We got anybody else?
We also have area code 816. Area code 816, you're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
This is Randy G. Hello, everyone.
Hey, Randy.
We've got some testosterone sprinkled over this estrogen. Oh, nice. We like to introduce it. You know, with all these sopranos, we like to occasionally have a tenor in there. Great to have you. Thank you for. Is that our full compliment this evening?
That's everybody.
That's great. That's great. How many times have you and I and Neutron sat here talking to each other and, you know, it was like we needed a fourth for bridge. You know, we couldn't. It was just the three egos. Welcome, everyone, and I'm going to, I'm looking for the board here. I don't have it. It's not up at the top of the late night poets. We've still got something
going on. Did you want me to post links, Bobby, or did you want to do it?
Oh, that would be outstanding. Did you get overtime for that?
Double time.
Absolutely. I'm going to have.
You cracked me up.
So, meritorious week.
I will post.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I will post it overtime or not.
That would be great. Appreciate it. And we got, looks like Poetic Picasso's out there in the wings. And Pam. And,
Hello.
Hey,
all
come
right.
on,
well,
guys. Come on,
Babbler's guys. Up first. The Babbler on the spot.
I think that is appropriate in the extreme. Babbler, would you honor us with a reading?
Absolutely. So this is Under the Big Top. I've been staring at this image now for far too long a time, flipping through my Rolodex for a clever set of rhyme. All my brain cells have given up. I've only just one left. And to be quite honest with you, he's really not the best. He hopped upon a tricycle and rallied up some nouns. But since then, all he's done is cycle round and round. My other cells are getting bothered and concerned. I'd let them help, but I need them for recalling what I've learned. One is for making certain I don't forget to breathe. Another is for eating. Another how to read. One holds the memory of learning how to talk. The two in the back are essential. They tell me how to walk. A couple to help with bathing. The last one tracks the time. So you see, I can't lend them for a silly thing like rhyme. I let him ride for as long as he liked, circling neath the tent. I'm not sure he ever stopped, because this is how it went. End poem.
Splendid. And just so everyone knows, and I'm sure you already do anyway, but just for the sake of redundancy, what we're reading from tonight, and Babbler's piece is part of with the entries for the contest, April Weirdness Continues, the drawing of Stefan Dietz, good Irish name. We had some really interesting artwork out there. They were all sketches, and this fellow has a very out there sense of art, and I threw them out there, and you folks pounced on them, and we got some really interesting writes, and that was the first one. And let me start off with a comment by saying that I liked your rhyming, very smooth. I love that you nailed the prompt. Under the big top, it's great. You've got the little audience in the background, all your other brain cells. I like the way you introduced a little bit of science in with the madness. One is for making certain I don't forget to breathe. Another is for eating. Another, I know how to read. Got to remember those autonomic bodily functions. They're important. But this was a delightful piece. Very, very wry humor. Very smooth reading. Very melodious. And really enjoyed it thoroughly. Miko, what did you think of Babbler's piece?
I also really liked how you pulled the prompt in with the audience, and the fact that they're concerned, like the other brain cells are concerned, almost to the point where you can't let them stop what they're doing to go check on this other brain cell that's in this frivolous task of going round and round trying to find rhyming words. I think it's just, I love your humor in it. A lot of your writes, you know, they have a humor, and, you know, it's very you, but some of your writes delve into more of a dark humor, but I like that this one, it still has those elements of dark humor, but it's just, it's more lighthearted for me. I like it.
Great comment. Thank you, Miko. What were you thinking about this one?
I love it. I really loved the second stanza. All my brain cells have given up. I've only just one left. And to be quite honest with you, he's really not the best. I love the way she said that part. She was like, well, he's not great. I feel like this is about me. I really, really loved this. It does have that little bit of dark humor because it's like, you know, not forgetting to breathe and remembering to eat and, you know, when your brain is scrambled, I say from experience, those are actually things that you have to think about that you don't realize you're thinking about until you've lost your capacity to think. So I thought this was really creative and wonderful. And I have news about Babbler. Babbler, can I say?
You do?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. She is going to be the new co-host for Part Sinner, Part Saint.
Really?
I'm stealing her up.
That's cool. Perfect.
Outstanding.
Perfect.
What a wonderful choice. And what is the name of the show again?
Part Sinner, Part Saint.
Ah, and when is what is the time slot for that?
That is the after midnight. That's after the open poetry. So it's, I consider it Friday night, but it's technically Saturday morning.
I know, I always get those confused myself.
It seems in my phone
thing. That's great. Outstanding. And when do you start, dear?
I'll be there on Friday. But the first one that I will pick for will be later. I'm not sure which week that is, Afiziana. No better than me.
I think this week you're there as co-host, but it's not your contest. And then the next week will be your contest because we're going to take turns.
Yeah.
Jill, we got to call in and lend our support.
Please do.
Lend our support. Absolutely. Yeah, I'll bring the chips.
He must.
and the red wine. Okay. Congratulations. Afiziana, great comment, and thank you for the wonderful good news. And Randy, we haven't forgotten about you. What are you thinking about Babbler's piece?
Oh, it was very clever. It was funny, very humorous all the way through. I appreciated how, again, as had been mentioned, about how she connected all the other brain cells into the scene. And you know, my other cells are getting bothered, concerned. I let them help, but I need them for recalling what I've learned. I mean, it was very clever and humorous and very engaging. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
Good. Thank you for the great comment. Appreciate it. And I did. I like the tongue in cheek humor. It was very and more lighthearted than most of your stuff. I agree with Mika. And now that we know that you've got that, you've got that brain cell, you're gonna have to tap it a lot more.
Just the one, you know, squeaking around in there.
But, you know, just you make appointments with it, and you know, make sure you've got it scheduled. But you nailed the prompt. You really did. So great choice, great verse. Who have we got up next, Mika?
Well, next up we have Randy Peace.
Good choice. Randy, you're on deck. You ready?
Okay. Yes, I use the artwork that you used at the beginning of it. It wasn't
actually
a prompt, but I used
it as
something.
Go for it.
I was attracted to it, so I used it as my prompt.
Understandable. I suspected someone would do that anyway. I'm glad you did.
And the poem is Helplessly Moping. As children, the world seems so huge because they're small, always looking up at adults who appear to be 8 feet tall. This leaves a lasting impression on young developing minds. So much of life is just out of reach, so unfair and so unkind. Causes them to think of the possibilities when they get old, that everything must become attainable as their life unfolds. No more tugging on daddy's pants to ask for his assistance. Gaining height and reach with age should make a difference. Unfortunately, some don't grow up despite attaining height, their lack of self-esteem becoming their never-ending fight, stuck in a world of their own making and seeking retribution in a land of Gullivers in which they're one of the Lilliputian. Of course, this is self-inflicted, born out of their imagination, a built-in excuse to continually exist in a state of agitation. Emotionally stunted, they remain blinded by childish choices, always seeing themselves as tiny, oblivious to helpful voices. End poem.
Well done. Great read. Great read. And by the way, Babbler, your read was great. I love the way you injected humor into it. Let's get Randy some comments. And Babbler, since you were on deck for your reading before, we'll let you start with the comments.
I really like this. You know, it talks about children, and then it talks about stunted growth, not in the sense of, like, their actual height, but their emotional development, like their personhood. I also really appreciated the word Lilliputian, which you don't read often, and it's basically a small or insignificant thing, paired with the Jonathan Swift reference to Gulliver, who appeared huge. So I really enjoyed this. I just talked about, like, you know, the emotional suffering when you remain a child inside, and how frustrating that can be and how pent up that can be when you realize the world that seems so huge can be so stifling. So I really liked it. I thought it was a great piece.
Thank you, Babbler.
Great comment. Thank you. Thank you, Babbler. And Aphasiana, what are your thoughts?
I really liked the beginning of the third stanza. Unfortunately, some don't grow up despite attaining height, their lack of self-esteem becoming their never-ending fight. And that even if your body grows, sometimes you don't emotionally mature or you don't, get that confidence that lets you grow up. And some of us never attained the height. I haven't grown since I was about 10.
I can't blame that. I was 11. I've grown since I was 11 years old.
Well, remember, you gals, dynamite comes in small packages. Dead silence. Someone, please say something.
I love watching myself migrate in school photos from, like, the back middle to the front row. Kind of cracked me up.
Oh, yeah. I know the feeling. Aphasiana, were you finished with your comment?
Yes. Thank you. It was good.
I just had to know what your complete thoughts were. But no, thank you. Thank you for the great comment. And you're right. That is a great observation. And Mika, what did you think?
Oh, man, I had to go to the same stanza that Ephesiana did, but I just love that you brought Gulliver and the Lilliputians in, stuck in a world of their own making and seeking retribution. I mean, if that doesn't remind you of every person with little man syndrome, I don't know what would. The people who project, you know, all of their insecurities onto everyone around them and, you know, the fear that they feel for people to rise above them. You know, if you ever had a boss that was like this, you know, they would hold you down on purpose to make sure that they retain their position, even if it meant that they couldn't move up to the next position. You know, it's such a self-destructive and a destructive in general way to look at the world. I think you just described it very perfectly.
Thanks, Mika.
Great comment. Great comment. I enjoyed your rhyming pattern. I thought your rhyming was extremely clever. You got some complex multisyllabic words in there, which is always impressive. I mean, you got retribution and Lilliputian. I once ventured near that, and I think I rhymed Terpsichorean and Gregorian. But you've got some great, I mean, you've got some great rhyming in here that is complex, and this is not an easy thing to do. It's very harmonious. It's got a great cadence to it, and the philosophical observations are spot on. I mean, you've got some great, some don't grow up despite attaining height, lack of self-esteem, and this is a self-inflicted, born out of their imagination. This is and emotionally stunted, they remain blinded by childish choices. It's got humor, but it's got some philosophy in it. So I'd say this is a very cerebral piece here in the way you've written it. So well done, sir. Well done.
Thanks, Bobby.
Welcome. And who's next on the Diaz here? Okay. Mika, you want to cue one up first?
Next up, we're going to put up a piece by Rob Cohen.
Oh, I claim the reading of that one. I love Rob's stuff. Okay. Yeah, I remember reading this one earlier. Okay, we've got, let's see, let's open it up here. Here it is. Okay, we've got Sketched Shades of Gray Disarray. And I noticed at the bottom in his author's notes, pretty much drew about almost a dozen of the prompts and the sketches in there. So he's definitely blended a lot of the artwork in his observations. So keep that in mind during your listening here. Okay, we got Sketched Shades of Gray Disarray. Do you know where
Bobby,
the playground...
Bobby, this is SoundCloud.
Am?
There's a SoundCloud. I don't know if it's loaded, but...
Please, go ahead. Okay.
Unfortunately. Unfortunately.
He sounds better than I do. Yeah.
Oh,
thank you for reminding me.
The reason that I didn't mention the SoundCloud is because, unfortunately, it didn't get loaded.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, dear.
Well,
no, it's fine.
Neither
SoundCloud that was to be loaded tonight got loaded. I'm not sure why.
Uh-oh.
But, yeah, we don't have any SoundCloud.
Here. Tell the engineer no dessert for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Pretend I'm Rob Cohen. Do you know where the playground goes? The sawdust forest falls the more we grow. One. Rust moves through sand absorbed by roots, sunk in the sandbox/pot, where the sun hides in shade. He grows barbed wire thorns along his stem, and nail petals sting the bees, which momentarily settle. 2. Monsters crawl from under the bed, up the bedpost, and slither into sheets where their phallic teeth sink deep, leaving wounds which don't form scars, but cover the stars in mortal darkness. 3. Locked shut in the corner, shunned to wear a dunce cap. Once prince to the chessboard throne, he crawls as a fallen pawn, prism desk lamp unplugged, fade to black, conveyor belt, carved puppet, rainbow flames, doused tame. 4. Metaphysical metamorphosis. Butterfly cloaked in chalkboard eraser dust from graphite cocoon schools. Full bloom spring crayons shrouded in gray-scaled moth straitjackets, chanting the mantra, chasing light bulb heights until death. 5. Drawers of graphite bars, old wooden block playthings, trapped by genital-shaped locks and symbol chastity belts which bind blindly. 6. Handcuffed wrists break out when a mind is unchained, roaming the streets throughout day and night. 7. Spring sows seeds of suicide, selling false advertised elvish lies hung from Christmas tree lights. Starving yeast bubbles pop. Carving bottles, sugared mania. Lithium bridges led over the valley of hanging. Darkness spread brightest between the book weights of the seasonal equinox. Batteries spark, spiking at full voltage, illuminating the lilac months in the wasteland garden. Chalkboard mirrors face a school uniform days. Red glazed eyes stalked into alleys. Their children go to die. End poem. All right. Who wants to be put on the spot on this? You know what? I'm going to do a Faziana. I'm going to let you lead the march here.
Oh, that's fine. I love Rob's poems. I mean, I basically always love his poems. But they're so vivid and, you know, I don't mean this in a bad way, but odd, like very unique images that he brings to life. I really liked he grows barbed wire thorns along his stem and nail petals sting the bees, which momentarily settle. Like the bees are not the ones doing the stinging. They're getting stung by the flower. That is intriguing to me. There's the monsters under the bed. At the end, I really liked chalkboard mirrors face a school uniform days. The mirrors have become the chalkboards, and the chalkboards have become the mirrors, and there's like that kind of like just spaced out, not actually like learning and engaging kind of thing. Spring sows seeds of suicide is great alliteration and a really dark, deep thought. You know, he always has such thought-provoking writing that I have to read it a couple of times to fully get everything. But on first impression, I really enjoyed this.
I agree with you. And I will tell you, for those of us who have to read it several times, myself among them, especially since I'm judging, do yourself a world of favor and open up in a separate tab the contest tab, and that way, because you notice he's referenced the quote also prompts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 8, 10, and 28. So in order to really appreciate where his piece is springing from, I put the artwork right next to it. And that really gives you a much better sense of what his inspiration was. but like the locked, shut in a corner, shunned to wear a dunce cap. And there's one piece of artwork in there that has some poor little fellow sitting there wearing a dunce cap and looking miserable. But there he is. And he's got he's got a chessboard under the dunce cap. These drawings are so complex that I think they suited Rob perfectly. I mean, he had a field day with these things. He said he loved them. So I wish I was corresponding with him. But look at the artwork next to it when you're evaluating it. Did you want to add anything, Faziana?
No, I think that's a really good point, that looking at the art adds another level to the read.
Definitely, because this is some pretty complex art, and some of it kind of disturbing, too. Randy, what did you think of Rob's piece?
Oh, Randy had to go to bed.
Oh, dear. Who tucked him in? No one's admitting to it. I don't blame you. Okay. All right. Well, Mika, you're next in the queue. What did you think of Rob's piece?
I really love this. I think what's so amazing about Rob's pieces is the way that he evokes, a really intense concept into each one of his writes. I've never read a write of his, but I wasn't overcome by a sense of, often either guilt, shame, fear, or anxiety over the topic that he's bringing up, because he speaks so much truth to it, and he shines a very harsh light onto the things about humanity that we tend to try to sweep under the rug, that we tend to try to keep hidden. And in this poem, I think he did that as well. And I think, what I get from it is that he's talking about the transition from childhood to adulthood and how painful it is and all the ugliness associated with the loss of innocence. This isn't just, leaving Eden, the knowledge of good and evil. This is about how the world encroaches on an innocent mind and twists what was good and what was pure into something completely not. And it starts from the first stanza on. A sawdust forest falls the more we grow. The trees being turned to sawdust, I think, is the first clue that this isn't a happy metamorphosis. And I like what you were saying, Ephesiana, about the nail petals stinging the bees, which momentarily settle, about, I guess what looks to be a petal of a flower, what looks to be beautiful and, innocent, isn't. And then I think my favorite part was probably the monsters crawling from under the bed up the bedpost and slithering into sheets where their phallic teeth sink deep, leaving wounds which don't form scars but cover the stars in mortal darkness. I think there's a couple of different ways to interpret that, whether it's talking about, just sexuality itself and its ugliness coming to disturb you from your innocence of it. Or whether it's talking about sexual assault, I think it could work either way. There's just a lot of nuance to this, and I wish I was more coherent in my comment. But really, what I think is that there's so much of sexuality, sexual identity, gender identity that's kind of built into this, and all of it is talking about the opening of your perception. From the innocent to the not so innocent, and about how that really isn't a pleasant change at all.
Great comment. Wow. You really seen a lot in that, and thank you for sharing it all. Babbler, What are your thoughts?
I got a surprisingly similar story to Mika. There are some slight differences in how I took it. You know, I took this as, yeah, the metamorphosis of a child growing up, going into puberty. The stanza is about monsters crawl from under the bed, up the bedposts and slither into sheets where their phallic teeth sink deep. I picture is almost like the assault of sexuality, like realizing that you are a sexual being. And how that just kind of creeps in, whether you want it to or not, you know. And then, you know, how the school system kind of shoves everybody into a mold and wants you to do this or that. You know, I think conveyor belt, carved puppet, rainbow flames, doused, tame. You know, if you're not hetero, if you're not cis, you know, like that's just, you know, they try to hide that. They try to mask it. They never really say, oh, don't be, but they also don't make it nice and acceptable. You know, it's real hard when it's like, this is the girls' locker room and this is the boys' locker, you know. It makes it more difficult. And then, you know, butterfly cloaked in chalkboard eraser dust, I think, speaks on that again. And then later, I think they talk about, you know, he talks also about how spring sows seeds of suicide, selling false advertised elvish lies hung from Christmas tree strings, is about, like, you know, with puberty also comes the awakening of mental illnesses. You know, that's when, you know, young adults and children who, you know, are developing start to get diagnosed with things like with bipolar and with depression and with, you know, manic disorders and all of that. You know, those genes and those potentials can start to become real. You know, that's when schizophrenia, you know, can start to be diagnosed, things that didn't previously exist. But much like the sexuality side of things, they get kind of shoved under the rug. They get kind of ignored. And this is what, you know, leads to the end with the red glazed eyes stalked into alleys. Their children go to die. You know, children die in the acts of puberty because they're no longer children, but also under-recognized, undertreated, mishandled, you know, struggle, mental illness, and sexuality can lead them there as well. So that's kind of what I'm seeing. In this, it's, you know, talking about the struggles of puberty from multiple angles.
Great comment. Very profound. Yes, you got. There's a lot of depth to what you're both. And I'm sitting here, kind of scrolling back and forth between the poem and the sketches. And I see in his second stanza, I'm looking at prompt three, yes, three, and you see this, this weird sketch of a little girl who's got all of these monsters over her face and her head and her, behind her eyes, and the fact that he says, you know, monsters crawl from under the bed, up the bedposts, and slither into sheets. And one of the monsters has got some pretty horrible-looking teeth. And it's you see a lot in the drawing that you can take in different directions. And I like the direction that you've taken it in, because that is something that never would have occurred to me. But upon reflection, you're absolutely right, because you never know when you come upon sexual awareness, and very often you don't even know what it is. You know, it's kind of like, this feels weird. Why do I feel this way? It is sort of like a monster coming out, and you're having to deal with it. So this was a great round of comments. Thank you. Thank you very much. Let's see. We're going to go back to the board, and who do we have up next? We have my traffic cop directing traffic here.
Also, great comment, Babbler. I love what you said about mental illness and that, how it manifests at puberty, but especially with the lithium reference that's in there, too. I think, I don't know, that was just cool.
Mm-hmm.
But next up, we have Victoria Frost.
Hey. Nika, would you like to tackle that one for us, please?
I'd be honored. Okay. And this is called The Bicycle by Victoria Frost. I miss when times of bicycles were all for fun and games, and crowds were full of laughter, not the constant judging gaze. Instead, I sit here hunched and trying not to go down in flames. A jury of my peers to peek, to look upon my shame, the color draining from my dreams, the rainbows fade to grays. I miss when times of bicycles were all for fun and games. Those golden days to play pretend and legendary claim. And each night came with a kiss and self-affirming praise. Instead, I sit here hunched and trying not to go down in flames. Each dream is lost with each mistake. My arm shakes as it aims. Please guide this shot to make its goal my broken spirit praise. I miss when times of bicycles were all for fun and games. Night has come and dreams are lost. I'm losing at these games, wishing to know the navigation of this forsaken maze. Instead, I sit here hunched and trying not to go down in flames. For now, I sit here pedaling to work of all my blames. The world just spins around and around, a constant blurry haze. I miss when times of bicycles were all for fun and games. Instead, I sit here hunched and trying not to go down in flames. And poem.
Excellent reading. Great job. This has got an interesting format to it. I like Victoria's work. She's got a refrain in here that alternates between stanzas. Instead, I sit here hunched and trying not to go down in flames. And then the next, I miss when times of bicycles were all for fun and games. And then she unifies them in the last stanza and revisits them both. And this is a prompt four, which is the little guy going round on the bicycle with the audience in the background that looks identical to him, and the skull off to one side. I knew that was going to net some interesting inspirations and evaluations or interpretations. But this one's really great. I mean, just and so different from yours, Babbler. You know, it just same. This is what I love about the poetry. Same illustration. Totally different take, and I love the fact that, you know, you can see the universe in so many different ways by just simply whose eyes you look through. And the golden days to play pretend and legendary claims, and each night came with a kiss and self-affirming praise. It's almost a non-rhyming rhyme, but it's got the assonance in there that unifies it so beautifully, and you don't see assonance used as much as alliteration, but it's still when you hear it, it definitely makes an impact. So the great piece, Victoria, and Mika, you read it. What did you think of it?
Oh, great comment, Bobby. I really like this as well. I for some reason in the beginning I was kind of thinking on, you know, the bicycle. I was seeing like when you ride a bike as a kid and you're so full of joy to, you know, to pedal down the street or wherever you're pedaling, and it felt like pure freedom with the wind rushing in your ears and just pedaling around. And then at the end, you know, of the first stanza, I was thinking, okay, this is her pedaling over a bike. Like an exercise bike, a stationary one that doesn't go anywhere. And you're just trying to maintain whatever sense of control or you know, status that you have in your life, home wound on, I felt like maybe I was going too shallow with it. I felt like maybe there was some other meaning that I was missing.
No, but a great observation. The exercise equipment is what I call the Zen workout, because wherever you are when you started, that's where you are when you finish. it does tend to give one a sense of futility sometimes, because it's all that energy expended and you haven't moved a bit. So great comment, great observation. I like that. Aphasiana, what did you think?
I thought about the exercise bike too, especially because of the line, a jury of my peers to peek, to look upon my shames. So I remember in university we had this gym that was like the stupidest place. It was in the middle of like the food court area. So it was like, and on display, like with pure windows. So it's like everyone's watching you work out on these exercise bikes. And I am in terrible shape. So I was just like so self-conscious about it. So when I read that line, I was like, yes. Everyone looked like their absolute prettiest when they went to work out. It was ridiculous to me, like the makeup and the hair and like everything. And I was just like, no. So that's all I could think about when I saw that I jury of my peers to peek. But then later on, I was thinking, she's also talking about like the mental bicycle of you know, pedaling and being kind of going in circles. And that made me think about like a hamster on a wheel. And it's like we work and we work and we work and we're just going around, and it's you're lost in that wheel. So I thought it was also like a mental game of being on the bicycle. But I definitely saw what Mika saw at the beginning there too.
Thank you. Great comment. Great observations. And that must have been hell trying to work out in that environment. I'd put a paper
bag over my
head. I'm not
going to lie, I didn't go very often.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you a bit. And Babbler, what did you think?
Yeah, no, I also thought of the exercise bike, you know, the change, how differently you bicycle as an adult. You know, you don't really see a lot of adults leisurely bicycling somewhere. I mean, you might occasionally see someone riding a bike, either like seriously, you know, where they've got the bike and on the long side of some winding road that you're like, where the hell did you come from?
Yeah.
Or, you know, but that's serious. That's like serious biker. Or they're on the exercise bike, or maybe they're commuting, you know, but it's never like leisurely, like you're never having, it's not for a good time, you know. I don't see that very often.
Great observation.
That's where my mind went, is, you know, all the joy of a bicycle is sucked out at some point, and it becomes just a tool for weight loss, a tool for exercise, a tool for transport, but not a tool for joy. You know, I don't really know where that change happens, but it seems to happen. So I thought this was an interesting highlight of that.
Oh, great comments. I very astute observation, because I was one of those kids who lived on my bicycle. I mean, the weather got, even when it was inhospitable, I have the great distinction of being the only girl in my eighth grade class who would ride her bicycle to school, because the others just didn't think it was cool. I was the only girl, and I was the only girl that also got home in 5 minutes, you know, because I was, threw my books in my basket in the back, and off I went. Yeah, it was all guys and me, you know. But you're right. And in the summertime, I would just I was all over just riding the bicycle just for pleasure, and very often for transport. But now you see these people with this grim intensity they're on the bicycle. And it's almost like they're doing penance. You know, they just got this mission, and they're, of course, wearing, you know, clothing that looks like it was sprayed on, and they look like they're about 2% body fat. You know, when I see a real person on a real bicycle, I celebrate them, because it's like, yeah, the rest of them look like they're, you know, anorexics on wheels. It's
someone who doesn't have to add padding to their ass.
Okay. Hey, I firmly maintain if you're going to have a swing, you've got to have a backyard to put it in. Oh, and that's all I have to say about that matter. Great comments, folks. Great comments. Let's see who we. Oh, we have "Beneath the Surface" by Stephen C. Wellman. And let's see, Babbler, would you like to read for us?
Absolutely. All right. This is "Beneath the Surface." Beneath the surface, this made-up, kept-up facade is a mystery, a sea of secrets, oceanic depths, deep and dark, buried beneath a tide of waves too deep to swim. We become cold from the exposure. Our darkness is a security blanket. We are a Linus without our cloak, Cinderella without her glass slipper. We create our own monsters out of our own surroundings. Insecure. Sure, they aren't real, fictional fables, and so are we when we only scratch the slippery surface, our hearts racing, scrambling to hide our flaws. We accentuate the negative. We are undeveloped portraits, light exposing the lie. Complacency allows our bright to be dark and our dark to be light. Deceitful depictions detract. Transparency is a true way mirror. Your heart on your sleeve, never hidden from view. Brokenness breeds beauty when our surface is stirred and scattered. Luminescent light pours through stained glass windows. Colorful creations reveal our heart and soul. End poem.
Great read, Babbler. Great. And not easy, considering this is one continuous stanza. You got to figure out, you draw the breath where you want to.
There is no punctuation.
No. Hey, that's just, you know, that's spurious, you know. Okay.
Yeah, it's optional.
Yeah, okay. Afasiana, what did you think of Stephen's work?
I love this. I liked the Linus and Cinderella references, but especially because it says, we create our own monsters out of our own surroundings. And it points out that they're fictional, but so are we. If we only allow a small part of ourselves to be revealed. I thought that was a really interesting twist on that. It was like, they're just fables, but maybe we are too. I really liked the idea of the undeveloped portraits, you know, picturing the negative that only shows certain aspects, and kind of like the darker side that we're focusing on. This was really creative, and I love the way that he expressed everything.
Thank you. Great comments. And Babbler, you read it. What did you think of it?
I thought this had some really interesting message. You know, we coddle ourselves sometimes, you know, and then when you do that, you don't really know who you are, and you don't really know how the world works for you. So everything becomes dark and scary. You know, there's comfort in what you know, but if you don't reach out to know more, then everything is creepy. And that includes yourself. You know, you have to get to know yourself. Otherwise, you can be creepy to your, you know, you can scare yourself because you don't know who you are. I really love the line, transparency is a true way mirror. You know, if if you're honest with yourself and you're open with yourself and you're open and honest with others, then you're more true to yourself and you know yourself better and other people know you better and that becomes less scary. You know, people are frightened of what they don't know or don't understand. And so I think this has a really great message, you know. Brokenness breeds beauty when our surface is stirred and scattered. Luminescent light pours through stained glass windows. Colorful creations reveal our heart and soul. Break yourself, and you'll know what you're made of. I think it's a great piece.
Oh, great comment. Great comment. I'm looking at it, and it's written off of Prompt 28, which is looks like a youngster or young person sitting at a drawing table with the light over them, and underneath and around them they've got a crocodile and snakes and wolves and leopards and, you know, jungle and a bird of prey sitting on the edge of the table, and the individual, the character, is drawing an eye, which is where I think I see the unfinished portraits of ourselves, and we create our own monsters. So here's this individual sitting at a table that's got surrounded by monsters, and who's to say that these aren't of his own creation? So beneath the surface, this made up, kept up facade is a mystery, a sea of secrets. A great beginning, and you're right that some of the same lines captured me. The wordplay, transparency is a true way mirror. Very clever turn of phrase. Never hidden from view. Brokenness breeds beauty. Other than the great alliteration, it's a great thought. So, Mika, what were your thoughts about this piece?
Oh, I really liked it, and I like what you guys had to say about it as well. I was thinking, you know, this is not the only piece that we've had tonight about projections, about the way that one's own insecurities, you project outward in your perception towards others. We create our own monsters out of our own surroundings, insecure, sure they aren't real, fictional fables, and so are we. I really like the way that people are bending and twisting perception in these rights. And thinking about the way that how we perceive the world actually influences its behavior.
Great comment. And I had a feeling that this particular artwork, as very stylized as it was, I was looking for a diplomatic phrase, very stylized as it was, I knew it was going to evoke some really interesting some interesting entries, and I was not wrong. So who else have we got? Who's next on the queue?
Oh, yeah, I guess I should have been doing that. One second.
That's all right. You're enjoying the show. I'm cool with that. I mean, you'll find me a zero-pressure, laid-back host.
Well,
okay.
Next we have Theonic.
How do you pronounce that? Theonic?
Well, I don't know if I'm right, but I thought it was Theonic.
I think you're right. I think you're right. And I'll take this one. Boy, you have it all. On the hills of your childhood, where meadows still awake, hisses of spring and rivers of a fairy tale, the little boy dreams of horses and houses he draws, mother and sister staring in awe. Transferred reality, born out of family, two heads in your head. Boy, you had it all. You have it all. They'll be your guide under the angels of paradise swing. In the little house on the hill, they were laughing, laughing at the moon and the stars. He gave them names and played with them under his moonlit travels, drawing the lines for new houses for his friends, building a brand new world for his new friends. Born out of family, transferred reality. In your head, two faces. Boy, you had it all. You have it all. They'll be your guide under the angels of paradise swing. On a paradise wing where light still travels, sweeps emotions with the accuracy of a lion, executing the prey. Oh, I won't pray. For this one, I won't pray. I'll dance her to her way. Born out of family, in your head, two heads, transferred reality. Boy, you had it all. You have it all. They'll be your guide under the angels of paradise swing. Where to go? To the sea, to the mountain, to the old creek, to the tree. Oh, the boy sees no more tears, no more laughter. No, no, no. It's all over now. It's only him and his bird note store. Out of family born, heads with two faces in your head. Transferred reality. Boy, you had it all. You have it all. They'll be your guide under the angels of paradise swing. End poem. And I can't wait to hear the comments on this one. Mika, why don't you start us off?
I'm really sorry. I have to step away for a minute. Can you come back to me on the next one?
Absolutely, I can do that. I don't even need a reason. Babbler, I'm going to put you in the seat.
I'm really fascinated by this, you know. I think it's, you know, telling the tale of an imaginary boy, you know, who can, not an imaginary boy, a real boy, who can imagine everything, you know, whose imagination is just absolutely boundless, and that everything he ever needed, he can make up in his mind, you know, all the friends, all the places he wants to go, all the things he wants to see, everything he wants to do. He's empowered to do it and even to do things that other people haven't done because he can think it up. I love the way that some things kind of morph, you know, just this idea, for some reason, they morph it like in my mind, you know. It says under the angels of paradise swing. My mind wants to merge it to paradise wing, you know, like the,
yes,
the bird wing.
Yes.
There are feathers on the illustration's face, but that's not what it says. It's my own mind twisting that phrase, which I find really fascinating. And then later it says a paradise wing. So, like,
yes,
I feel like it even plays with that, like kind of twists like the way your brain associates words, which I think is just incredible. I don't even know how I would try to do that. So I really enjoyed this. I thought this was absolutely fascinating.
Great comment. Thank you. Faziana, what are your thoughts?
I loved that the refrain that repeats changes its order. It's like transferred reality, born out of family, two heads in your head, becomes born out of family, transferred reality, in your head, two faces, which changes that one line slightly. But sometimes it's the exact same lines, they're just in a different order. And that's called something. It's a special kind of poem, and I can't remember what it is, where you have to alternate the order of things. And it's really an interesting technique. And I've never seen it where there's the stanzas in between that are not part of that format, but I think that works really nicely to use it as sort of a refrain. It's really interesting structure. And then as for the story itself, it's very intriguing. To me, it seems like born out of a dysfunctional family, probably, the boy had to transfer reality, kind of disassociated, and there became two heads in his head because he shut down when things were bad and created this imaginary world. I found this very intriguing, and I like the way it used the two different kinds of prey. There's some interesting wordplay there. Like Babbler said, swing felt like it was going to be wing. But again, I think that because the picture is included, it kind of gives us an expectation of certain things. So I find it interesting who chooses to include the pictures and who doesn't, because sometimes it influences the way that you read things.
You're right, it does. And I know what you're talking about. I think that's called, it's a four stanza poem. I think it's called a paradel.
Villanelle.
But yeah, it could be.
I'm not an expert.
Because each stanza is six lines, and the first three stanzas, the first and second lines are the same. I've seen contests done on that, and the entry quite impressive.
Pam taught me how to do it. It's very similar to the one that you're talking about, but it's a little bit different because it's like the last line of the first stanza has to be the first line of the second stanza or something like that. There's a rule where that one line moves all the time. I'll have to look it up in Pam's thing because she ran a contest for it, and I tried it once, and it was very difficult.
And Leaper gives it 29. So...
I think I'm pretty sure that Victoria's piece was a villanelle with the rotating lines.
Yeah,
that could very well. But it is the format is so intriguing and so artful, and it's really well done. I look at the and she was kind enough to put the inspiring prompt at the top of the head of her piece, and you look at it and you can see the origin of some of the thoughts and the comments in here. But still, again, it harkens back to what does this individual writer or poet see in this illustration? And I'm with everyone who said that they like the fact that Faziana, you said three lines and it repeats, but it's in different order. And I agree with you. It gives it a slightly different shading and flavor. But this is a really complex piece, very artfully done. And the interpretation, I think, of the prompt is spot on. So well done, Theonic. All right, you guys and your nom de plumes. Okay, all right, we got Growing Up by Co-op. Faziana, would you like to read that for us?
Absolutely. Growing Up by Co-op. Behind stone or concrete walls of houses or flats of our childhood, behind doors and halls, there lurk the knights and dragons, swords and slayings, occupying our thoughts at night, lullabies from birth, recounting a tale of horror, humming that song ad nauseum to terrorize children into submission, for down comes the baby cradle and all, where blooms loom, floating to the top of bedrooms, morph into a giant, appalled beast, petals that turn to claws, pistols that draw you to their carnivorous faces, then chomp you at weakness least. Finish your soup. Don't speak with your mouth full. Mother gags you with her orders. Don't fidget on your seat. Be still. Sit straight during meals. Father, if he exists, shoves spoonfuls while reading a magazine. Then they teach you to be nice, not mean. The repast is spent in an unsettling silence, the rancid air wafting of love unfulfilled. The little boy boxed mute and deaf to his father's expectations, the acid look replete with the menace and dread, dreams of flying on his Pegasus towards a horizon where his parents are dead. multifaceted gleam, a quartz house, precision hewn, spotlessly cleaned, of empty hearts and separate bedrooms, of empty Ajax boxes as Mr. Clean beams. The child recedes into his alcove reality, takes refuge in fantasy, begins to dream, learning to guide his reveries, controlling his nightmares. A lucid view of an optical illusion, a life bound by pragmatic delusions, where time is wasted on keeping a cage, constantly polished in order to fill an empty mind or eschew the thought process that leads to the final conclusion. We build our cages with gold, melt its key of 14 carat, twisting it into a ring, and offer it to our beloved. She becomes yours, and the child comes along. They became us and ours, teaching us this since little to practice and play house so that one day we buy one, live in it, and they live happily ever after till death do they part. A collective cremation, a domestic campfire within the bosom of our walls, smoke pluming out through the chimney of a picture-perfect home. End poem.
A superb reading. Well done. Well done. That was a long one, too. Wow. Okay. Mika, are you back?
I am back.
Hey! Did you hear this one?
I did. First of all, Faziana, what an amazing read. I love how you've broken a song right at this moment. But also, you know, it's so weird. You know, there's a lot of diverse prompts that you had put in your contest, but I feel like we're getting some themes that are being explored that are very, very similar, and yet the way that the author approaches them is so different from poem to poem. In this one, I feel like we're a visitation of the theme that Rob was trying to convey in his write, which is the loss of innocence and the transition between child and adulthood. And here it's given, you know, kind of a similar ominous tone. You know, the way that it's seen in the beginning, where not even the beginning, I'm sorry, I have to go to where blooms loom floating to top of bedrooms. Where blooms loom floating to top of bedroom is such an incredible start to the stanza. It's beautifully written. But also the fact that blooming is looming, it's cool that it rhymes, but also just the way that you would never think of the bloom as something that looms, you know, it's like an ominous word, loom, that it's floating on the edge of the horizon about to descend on you in a disaster. And then petals that turn to claws, pistols that draw you to their carnivorous faces, and then chomp you at weakness last. That's so interesting. You were talking about in Rob's poem, the phallic teeth that chew you, and the way that sexual awakening, destroys really. And here we're seeing that also, but in a way that I love how she put it. Carnivorous faces then chomp you at weakness last. I don't know. There's a lot to call out in this poem. There's a lot to talk about.
Go ahead. Continue.
Oh no, I want to leave it at that. I just want to say I love the way that she described
it. It's not an easy piece to comment on. I will grant you that. There are, as a matter of fact, there are very many of the stanzas can easily stand on their own, unsupported by the rest of the piece. But when you look at them in combination, what a complex layered piece. And the author's note says, I've not chosen a specific prompt for this piece. Once you peruse it, you will find that I've tried to be inspired by most of the graphite drawings that resonate personally. And you can see that. And if you look at the artwork, it clearly there is a motif there, and sometimes more disturbing than others. A multifaceted gleam, a quartz house precision hewn spotlessly clean of empty hearts and separate bedrooms. What a resonating line of empty Ajax bottles as Mr. Clean beams. And you're right, Mita, the line that blooms loom and morph into a giant sepaled beast, which again, it's speaking sepaled, as a part of the flower petals that turn into claws. The wordplay in this is quite complex and very impressive. The way the pieces woven together. Babbler, what did you think of it?
I thought this was fascinating and just kind of a look at the darker side of growing up. You know, when I read the flower stanza, I thought about, you know, how when you are little and you're in a room at night, the shadows on the wall and the things that you
yes.
see kind of form sinister shadows, and you can everything looks kind of sinister in the right light. Which, you know, that's kind of what I was picturing, is that there's a plant like that, and the night light is hitting it just right, that the shadow looks like it's about to eat you.
Yeah.
So I found that fascinating. And then, you know, the learning all these lessons by rote, like the things that every kid is told to do, so that you can grow up and do it all over again.
And
it's soulless and empty. And I think about also the stanza about the quartz house with the Ajax and Mr. Clean. You know, one side of my family is very wealthy, and I went to visit them once when I was 17. I mean, I visited them other times, but not few and far between. And they had a living room with a white, like everything was white. A white sofa and a white carpet and white pillows. And then on the wall was like a whole bunch of my cousin's art. And I'm like, what is the point of this room? Like, you can't even use this room. You can't, like, yeah, it looks really nice, but like nobody is sitting in here. You know, it's like legitimately just for show. Like,
did
you
have
a room in your house.
No,
but it may as well. Like, it was the most uninviting, quote-unquote, sitting room I'd ever seen. And I was just like, this is ridiculous. And it makes me just think of that. You know, it's for show. It's for show.
Yeah.
You know, look how clean and pristine and nice this looks. Don't we look so nice and put together? But don't, you know, it's not real. You know, there isn't any actual joy here. We aren't a tight-knit family. It's just, it's a showpiece.
Yeah.
I don't know. So that part rang particularly true to me, especially with the wealthier side of my family, because the poor side of my family is like the exact opposite. Like, nothing is for show. So I just found that fascinating. I thought it was a very interesting and complex write.
Yeah, and it's a very interesting dichotomy in your family that you've shared with us. Thank you for that. It does happen from time to time, and you look at them, you go, do they realize what kind of message they're sending? Probably not. Or maybe they do. You know, Afasiana, you read this, and superbly, I might add. What did you think of it?
I love it. I truly love this poem. It speaks to the imagination of the child, but to the like kind of false confinement that we put ourselves in this like suburban idea of what we're supposed to have. There's this kind of forced being put together, the way that it talks about the houses as cages. We build our cages with gold and melt its key of 14 carats, twisting it into a ring and offer it to our beloved. So this is like saying marriage is a cage. It's quite dark and cynical, but I really like am intrigued by the way that she puts it together. It reminds me a lot of the fairly recent film adaptation of The Little Prince, because the mother in that is trying to make the child very smart. So she has this really regimented schedule of this is what you're going to do to learn and all the things. And there is nothing on the schedule of, like, meeting other kids, of having fun. There's no playtime. There's no friends. It's like you're going to learn and you're going to do this and you're going to learn chores and you're going to behave. It's, like, all about learning. And I'm very much a proponent for learning. I'm an educator. But at the same time, it was like there you need to have – the joy and the imagination and the opportunity to make mistakes. And I feel like this is calling us out on not allowing that to happen. And there is a real darkness in a lot of our nursery rhymes and fairy tales and all of that stuff, like down comes the baby cradle and all. Like it's actually quite terrifying. And I like that she points that out.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I used to look at nursery rhymes. I mean, some of them, and fairy tales, I mean, just as an example, Hansel and Gretel, my God, you've got child abuse, you've got abandonment issues, not to mention
animal.
Oh, yeah, don't leave that out. That's why I tell people who say that opera is boring, said, come on, you've got murder, incest, cannibalism. What's boring about that? You know? Jesus. But you're absolutely right. And great comments all. And the last part of it also struck me was the cages built with gold, melted the key in 14 carats. Superbly constructed metaphor. Twist, melt its key of 14 carat, twisting it into a ring and offer to our beloved. And the cycle begins again. And you're right. I mean, perception is reality so often that sometimes we have to be careful of how we're perceived, you know, by other people. Now, personally, you know, my philosophy is fuck them if they can't take a joke. So, okay, Mika, give us Babbler went to bed? Aw, gonna miss her. The pillow beckons. Oh, I know, I thought I heard that in the background, the pillow talking to her. Okay, well, Babbler, thank you for joining us. And we have the three amigos again. We have Mika, Hafeziana, and myself. So, Mika, would you like to cue up the next piece?
Yes, well, next up we have Circus of the Inane by Vicki Moore.
Okay, refresh. There it is. Bum-ba-da-bum. Okay, where are you opening up? There it is. Okay, Mika, would you like to try this one for us?
Absolutely, I would. Okay, Circus of the Inane by Vicki Moore. Riding in circles around a ring with people watching, waiting for me to fall. Riding on a bike so small, hunched over and slow, burdened by my efforts, distracted by the crowd, wondering what they think, sitting against me, or hoping I'll make it. Headed nowhere, I keep riding, the same thing day after day. Never reaching a destination, tightrope walking cats, skeleton head clowns, diagrams all around me, fears of emptiness. My life is the same each and every day, and yet my life is a circus. End poem.
Well done. Great read. And Punk 4 seemed to attract more attention than I expected. That's interesting. So, Faziana, what did you think of Vicki Moore's piece?
I enjoy it. It reminds me a lot of anxiety, you know, worrying that people are waiting for you to fail, wondering what they think, questioning if they're betting against you. It has that sense of, like, insecurity, and, you know, it's always harder to do things when people are watching. I can type no problem until someone's, like, watching me, and then it's, like, all of a sudden I forget how to write. the simplest thing sometimes is just, like, don't look at me while I'm doing this. I don't know. I just... I'm awful for that. My mind will just go completely blank if someone's watching me try to do something. My brother used to tease me when I was a kid that I would, like, forget how to walk if there was, like, a cute boy around or something. He was like, why are you walking like that? I don't know.
Oh, no.
So this just made me think of that and how useless I am.
You have performance anxiety, as do so many of us. If I can, I'll tell a quick anecdote. My late partner, the first, and I, you all know I'm prior military, and with that comes strange things like having a K-bar, which is a very large knife, next to your bed on the nightstand. my house had been broken into. So I had a knife net because I don't like having firearms. Our first date together, I invited him to spend the evening. And the next morning, his phone rang, and he's, I'm going to take this, okay. He goes in the other room, and I can overhear him. He's talking to his brother. And his brother, the guy-to-guy, how did it go? And Tony, bless his heart, he says, he said, I like her. He's a nice girl. He said, I woke up this morning and I look over next to the nightstand and there's this enormous knife on the bed. He says, talk about performance anxiety. And I could just hear his brother in the background giving him crap. You fear being judged, and no one. I can't think of a whole lot of people who you know. Hey, yes, I'd like another dose of public humiliation, please. So, yeah, quite understandable. But you're right, and your observation on anxiety betting against me or hoping I'll make it. Interesting thought, and. This piece it's spot on to the prompt as all of them for number four was, but so many different and divergent interpretations, isn't it marvelous? So Mika, what did you think?
The way that this evokes the feeling of a tightrope walker in a circus. And I think that it's cool because all these pieces that tie into each other, like this one with Babbler's piece about the one brain cell and other brain cells being concerned.
Yes!
It tied in, but it gave a different perspective. I really like the way that certain people have interpreted this prompt similarly. But also in their own way. I just really like that.
And you've provoked a thought in my head. Wouldn't it be interesting if we took the pieces that all were written on the same prompt and put them all together? wouldn't that be an interesting story? With four authors. But you're right. It's seen through our life filters and interpreted by our personal experiences, which are never the same between two people, and that's why I really enjoy reading these pieces from people in the contest so much because of the different takes. Okay, we've got that was Kolob, and we have Obscurity by Hakan Seven. Okay, I'll take this one. Obscurity. And he has written, oh, this is interesting. He's taken prompt 25, which I don't think anybody else claimed. Oh, ha, ha, ha. If you remember the prompt, it's the one that has the little boy with the monkey sitting on his shoulders and covering his eyes with his hands. And that's the prompt he wrote to. And it's called Obscurity, A Thin Rain Outside, The Memory of the Wildfires in Your Heart, Pride Lost in Your Roasted Mind. Bundle full of unrequited loves, every cob I take off in the journey of life. Isn't it enough? The slaps you ate from life. If you're a traveler of the unknown, each end is a new beginning. Every truth in sight, you are only a dream. Swallow's breath is everything in my mind in a monkey's blind. End poem. Mika, you want to take a try at this?
Mika, are you muted? Did I get dropped? Bobby, are you there?
Are you with us? Oh, I'm here.
You did not get dropped. I'm sorry. I was muted, and I thought I pressed unmute, and then instead I hit it twice. I'm sorry.
You made it through the evening without that happening.
How does Neutron say it? The mute button made me a bitch.
I call it the mute monster. I like her way better. bitten by the mute monster. Now that you're back among us, tell us what you thought of this piece. Please.
This is very interesting. I really love how it started. A thin rain outside, the memory of the wildfires in your heart, pride lost in your roasted mind. It's interesting, the wildfires in your heart and pride lost in your roasted mind. It's like the wildfires in the heart, the excesses of the heart roasting the mind and turning it incapable of nuance, incapable of understanding more beyond what serves its own pride. This reminds me again of the other poems that we've read about projection and of perception. But in this one, we're taken much deeper into the mind of the person who's projecting, and less into the dichotomy and the interactions between the person projecting and the person who's projected upon. And here we talk about the real, I guess, the failures within the person who has the insecurities, who roast their mind with pride, over the wildfires of their heart. It's very interesting.
Great comment. Great perception. Faziana, what did you think?
Well, I really like what Mika said. I like the idea that the rain outside is considered thin because the memory of the wildfires is still like it's too hot within you. It's like even though there's the peace, you still feel the turmoil of the past. Yes, the fire is out, but it doesn't feel like it really is. I thought that was really interesting. The swallow's breath in everything in my mind is everything in my mind in a monkey's blind is a really interesting way of wording that. And I think that part in particular really shows the prompt.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Agreed. I'm still puzzling over the second stanza, bundle full of unrequited loves. Every cob I take off in the journey of life isn't enough. The slaps you ate from life. I'm kind of like, okay, that metaphor has just escaped me. But the last one, yes, I agree. It captures the prompt. And this was a very serious piece where I looked at that prompt and I thought someone could probably go very humorous on this if they wanted to. But again, it's how our life filters allow us to see things. It's pretty interesting perception on Hakan. Okay, we have Hiding by Lori List. And, well, we had to read a really, really long one of Hazeana, so I'm going to give you a really, really short one.
Okay. Hiding by Lori West. In a world of today, I hide like a child, not knowing where I am going the next day. Who will be my friend? So I will hide like a child around daddy's pant legs and act like a child to the world. These child ways scream out to him as I try to stand tall, hiding in my day. End poem.
Very nice. I can, despite my best efforts, this one slipped past me as far as recording the prompt. I think what they did was they went, as Randy did, with the prompt at the beginning of the contest, which was the little character clinging to the Gulliver's pant legs there, and that I think that's where that came from. So, okay, hiding. Moved my cursor and lost myself. In a world of today, I hide like a child, not knowing where I'm going to next. It's there's a lot of anxiety in these pieces that we're hearing tonight, and not surprisingly, from the stress and angst that you see in the artwork, there's a lot being said sub rosa in a lot of those pieces. But I think this one also, I think, worries about not being an adult, but not acting like one. Child ways scream out to him as I tried to stand tall, hiding in my day. So here's a person who's not comfortable, I think, with their status in life as an adult. And I think this harkens back to one of the other lines in one of the other pieces that I think it was Randy's piece, the same made the same observation. So, Mika, what did you think of this piece?
I really liked it. I think like a child around daddy's pant legs and act as a child to the world, these child ways scream out to him as I try to stand tall, hiding in my day. I think it's interesting because there's several different layers to the way that she put that, even though it's a short poem. The way that hiding around daddy's pant legs, it evokes that feeling in us of trying to let someone else lead, trying to let someone else be the driver behind what's happening. And we step out from that, we feel vulnerable, we feel insecure. But here, all of a sudden, at the end of this short poem, the short and potent poem, it says, I try to stand tall, hiding in my day. And suddenly it's not just hiding behind daddy's pant legs, hiding in my day, hiding in the good points, hiding in the points that everyone looks at and thinks, oh, you're doing so well, or oh, you're so cool, you're so socially adept, or whatever it is. Hiding in your day belies the darker side of you, or the side of you that doesn't read so successful, that doesn't read so so on top of it. And so it's not just hiding behind daddy's pant leg, it's actually hiding behind your own, hiding behind what you have accomplished, even if it was by accident, or even if it wasn't your full potential. I like the idea of the end of the poem emphasizing that your day, you know, the good points that shine on you, not being actually a true representation of you, and hiding behind them doesn't work because you can't replicate it.
Great comments. Great observation. Athasiana, you read it. What were your thoughts on it?
Well, what Mika just said totally changed it for me, so I'm going with hers. I really love that idea of hiding within your accomplishments and the day that you build for yourself. You know, sometimes having that successful routine of, like, you know, throwing yourself into your work or something like that is a way of hiding. When I first read it, I was just kind of thinking about, like, this feels, like, connected to pandemic life where I'm tempted to just, like, hide in my room and not go out and face the world. And I'm like, I hide like a child. But I really love what Mika's interpretation was. And so I'm jumping on that bandwagon.
Oh, I agree with you. I think that was a very astute observation. And I agree also with you, Mika. I try to stand tall, hiding in my day, and believe me, I can hearken to that because I gave myself a early parole from a prison sentence where I was serving time with FEMA, and when they went from offices to pods, to the open office configuration, which, by the way, was tried years ago in Europe and didn't work there. So, of course, the Americans, well, we'll make it work. What I used to hide in my day, I used to come in and get behind my computer and put my Bose noise reduction headphones on. And all I would listen to all day long was classical music. That was my survival tactic, which is what it sounds like as I try to stand tall behind. Hiding in my day is a survival tactic. You know, you want to survive your day, so you hide in it. And I used to hide in my headset. It didn't help that they had me under a white noise projector too, and when you've got tinnitus, that only makes life worse. I can truly appreciate Mika's observation on this, and I'm in violent agreement with you. So, okay, so we've got 15 minutes left. How much poetry do we have stacked up?
Well, we have quite a bit of poetry still left, but I also have a caller to bring on, and this is Area Code 203. Yeah.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Hi,
hey, who is this?
Hey, this is Ron.
Welcome. Better late to the party than not at all. Did you have a piece in this contest?
No, I posted a piece. It's way too long. It's fine. But I do have a comment on both the security and the hiding piece, if I may.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. Go ahead, Mika. Do we have his piece handy?
Well,
that's
I have
all right.
A piece,
I don't have to do my piece.
He had a comment also.
Yeah.
Oh, please do. Please do.
Because it's obscurity, when I heard that one, I was like, oh, it spoke to me. I was like, it was talking about me directly. I was like, Jesus. It was so hard-hitting. And I love the write of it. And I liked, like, the way it was playing with the words going off the prompt with the monkey on the shoulder and starting off with the wildfires and trying to play with that idea there. But most of all, towards the end of the last stanza, in a monkey's blind, but yet every other stanza before that is talking about what's being seen, an overall perception of what was saw. With the last mention of the dream and realizing that you were blind and everything, I just found that very hard-hitting. I like that idea there, how that twisted up to the end like that. And going forward with the hiding, I like to play the words again of I'm going the next. Instead of saying I'm going to the next, it was I'm going the next day. And I thought of a child in the right of saying, it was almost like saying they, who be my friend, instead of the day. It's like a play with words there, I thought. And at the end of it, the daddy's pants legs became a shadow. So it's like staring behind the shadow, I thought, in my opinion, is how I took it. But I also found it very wholesome, the piece. I found it very well captured as being a child with the anxiety and everything attached to it, as being like just a small person growing up in the world, and especially today's world. So, but at the same time, very wholesome in the innocence of it all.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. We really appreciate you coming in and participating. So, Macon, you said we have quite a bit left.
Oh yeah, we do. I put up Kenna Cole's piece next. Kenna, if you want to read that for us.
Please do.
Oh, me?
Yes, please.
Yeah, sure, I don't mind. Let me refresh real fast here. And there's, what, a story of a turn again? Correct?
Go ahead. Is that yours, where the story of eternity ends?
No, this is not my piece, but I'll read it for you guys, no problem.
Oh. Yeah, well, if you could drop it on the...
You had said you put a piece on... Wait, what was your...
Oh, this is Rome. My name is Rome, but I could read the...
If you've got your piece handy, just go ahead and plug it into the Late Night Poets chat group, where it says chat with Late Night Poets. We can all pull it up that way.
Oh,
no, we lost the Faziana.
Sure. There you go.
Great. There we are. Excellent. Please read it for us.
All right. Thank you. Boomerang hangups. Boomerang is questions I reflect on during moments. When I'm merely expressing, think I'm stressing, goes the questions. Goes the question, why ask, why'd you ask? The turnaround always hits different, especially if there's a difference. Existence always has been an exit to escape the current case of conditions. Ain't no getting used to what you ain't used to. Never found it interesting. Stop here. I'd rather the tougher routes without the conditioning. This is strength. I know the strain. I'm holding hands with the only balance. I know my manners can soul the manner. Heart is my home. The standard. Take your shoes off before you take a step. Bare feet before you. Months later, we realize it's how they try to sleep. I comb through the sweeter trials. Ain't nothing sweet about the death that murder's courting. Swimming on the treads, it was trending. What was certain, ain't nothing counting but the threads used to close the curtains. Story over morning tables and mother's porches. We get the picture, life goes on for the run. Minus sun for the wellest pennies. compared to what flows plenty. I say the float, of course, I'm sure more, such as the sand, ain't nothing to clam about. Let's air it out before it bubbles up. Ain't no sense trying to hold tight to what's not enough. Nothing correlates why you ain't letting go. How ain't he not enough? I died once and I was wide awake. I remember the dress. I'm trying to get it back. I'm steady chasing my death. Imagine the stress when I catch up. My breath will be the last thing I'm after until it's too late. Who waits for the moon to rise? I do. And life's a bitch. This much is true. Opinions is something we come accustomed to. Hang on the word of one, or should we hang on the words of many? Vows only gave the one, death only. Past or future, we've seen the same if efforts repeat. These errors only later proof to product, present to my knowledge, part of my etiquette. But still I remain, wasn't just predicted. Predator traits make up my mold normally. I cultivated beyond the scope, it's out of focus, what can you say? That holds more than the clay's gonna hold. It ain't gonna break the whole scheme. I blow things out of proportion. This ain't the question. Don't get the stepping to the literal sense and get the tripping metaphorically. My mind's bugging. Everything's feeling. I gotta get this off me before I implode, consoling souls. I'm done with the games. Me and my whole consuming. This just seemed like treason. Tricking my soul. This ain't the season. Who picked it? Who co-signed the open? Who don't get it? I'm tired of reminding victims, stop letting them punch your ticket. Sick of the holes I'm digging, I'm off pitch with the songs I'm singing. Ain't no split in this hole, the fork is in it. Therefore the ending, got as many holes as the sides in it. What's the difference when you can get lost in it? Thick as a, what they giving back, lack the drive and they dodge a fact. Shit ain't adding up, and can't no pair ever mount to the Plymouth Rock where they say they found you at. Solid facts have stories just like the Lost Raiders. Ain't no crash larger than Las Vegas, no matter. Still it reaches far, but it's close enough. Still we know there's ain't no chance in this closing up. I'll push the purpose, it's dry enough. And the burns are hurting. What's worth getting back, which you ain't gave no worth? Sorry about the stigmas, but stigmatas. I caught a glimpse of what this is after. Listen to this, spin it back if you ain't get it. You'll be hearing this shit backwards. Don't say I ain't said it. Follow every letter, maybe never. You get the point, A. You didn't know after every sentence follows. How can one determine the only lesson? It's not don't never, more than you can never. Say never when you can't see the end and ain't nothing's left but here. Right back to the same question. And peace.
I messed up. Wow. Sorry about that.
Wow.
Wow. Mika, you want to take a stab at comedy?
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot to this. There's a lot to this, so it's hard to
it's
comment
complex.
Right away.
It's really complex, babe.
Yeah. It really is. And every time, Rome, every time I hear you read your poems, I feel the same way. I feel, like, kind of overwhelmed. Like, the wave of your words washes over me, and it's difficult right away to shake my head out of the surf and make a comment on the meaning. Because in the moment, when I hear you read, I think I'm just overtaken by what it feels like to experience the performance. And then to try to catch on to any threads of meaning is difficult right away, even though all of those threads are there and all it takes is another read to come upon them. It's just that's not what originally comes out. Your read is a performance that overtakes.
Read. I agree with Mika. This is a very complex write, and to hear it performed by the author can be overwhelming because there is so much in this to digest. This is something I could never do, which is rap. It totally eludes me, and I always admire someone who can put a piece like this together. It has got so many different thoughts. My mind's bugged and everything's feeling. I got to get this off me before I implode. I'm done with the games, eating my whole, consuming. This is a piece that, like so many, like It's like Peter Salway's work. You hear it once, and you're caught in the wave of it, and it's one of those pieces you have to sit and really just focus on and take bit by bit to really savor it and appreciate it. Well, but this is an impressive, write. My goodness. And a beautifully, beautifully read. Maybe you were right. It's more of a performance than a reading.
Yeah. Yeah. Great comment, Bobby. I was going to say, too, that one of my favorite parts was existence always has been an exit. How the fuck did you write that? Existence always has been an exit. I don't know. To me, that line actually hits very different.
Thanks.
Yeah, that line kills me. Because no matter how many meanings I try to impart in the next lines that I read, existence always has been an exit is one of those epiphany lines. It's one of those lines where you read it and you think, oh my God, this person put into words what I always thought but never could say.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's one of my favorites too. Like. Because I know the thing, like you said it perfect. We always think it, and sometimes we write it. Like, the hardest part is just following that stuff up, really, more or less. Because you put it on paper, and you're like, how do I now continue, like, with it, you know?
Not every once in a while. And when you hear someone else say it, you smack yourself in the forehead and go, damn, you know?
Thank you very much for letting me share it. And also, I've heard you, brother. You do quite the same.
Thank you. What a great way to end the show, because we've only got a couple of minutes left. I don't think we really have much time to do justice to any more pieces. Mika, what have we got out there? Anything short?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. We only have like 90 seconds left, so I think we probably should end.
All right. Oh, in that 90 seconds, I'm going to do a commercial break, and I'm going to talk about I'm going to go to contests, and if I can get my cursor to do what I'm telling it to. Okay. I have another contest out there, and so does Neutron. My contest is the focus is a magazine that I found in out of Australia, and it's called Beautiful Bizarre, and it's got so I've used as a focus the artwork from their 2020 Beautiful Bizarre Art Contest, and the exhibit was called Midnight Garden. So the contest is called Once Upon a Midnight Garden. It's got, this is not the same artist. I did a little switch up, and it's got a bunch of different artists, but some fantastic art prompts. And we've already got eight entries in it. And I know Mika's got one going on female philosophers. I'm sorry, Mika. Neutron's got one going on female philosophers, and she's also got a Jean Paul Sartre one going out there too. So I get the art side of the house, and Neutron gets the philosophy side of the house, the existential side. So please check out our contest. And Mika, thank you so much for your assistance tonight. And I'm going to thank you, Rome, for joining us at the last minute and giving us a great reading. And I'm going to thank Babbler and Faziana and Randy and Absentia. And we're done.
Thank you guys for having me.
Good night, everyone. Good night, everyone. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your help. Good night now.
Have a great night.